2 Kings chapter 4, we read in the verses 20 and 21, just after this child had been given to this mother and this family. We read there, verse 20 and 21, when he had taken him, brought him to his mother. He sat on her knees till noon, and then died. And she went up, and laid him on the bed of the man of God, and shut the door upon him, and went out. On one occasion, the great evangelist, the great Chicago evangelist, D.L. Moody, once reported of a tremendous meeting that he had had. He came back to his home church, and he said, "I've had a tremendous meeting last night, folks. 2.5 people were saved." After the meeting, someone came to him and someone asked, "Well, what did you mean by 2.5 conversions? Did you mean, Mr. Moody, that 2 adults and 1 child was saved?" He said, "No, I mean that 2 children and 1 adult was saved. The adult's life was already half over, but the 2 children still had their whole lives before them to be lived for Jesus Christ." And D.L. Moody, he grasped the value of seeing a child who was saved, a child who was rescued, and a child who is transformed. And just like D.L. Moody, here in this chapter, 2 Kings chapter 4, we have another individual who truly understands the value of seeing 1 child raised to life. For here was a godly mother. This mother, as we have already seen, she, a couple of weeks ago, she spent most of her life barren. She was not blessed with children. However, we find Elisha, well, he had come along and he had asked the question, "Well, how can I repay this godly mother for her hospitality to me?" Eventually, between himself and Gehazi, they then decide that the best way is to sovereignly see a child given to this home. Now, we saw already that this woman was a great woman. She is described in this chapter just like that, a great woman. And whilst it predominantly refers to her substance and perhaps even her stature in the society of Shunem, this farming community, yet it also is a reference to her spirituality. Here was a woman who was a very spiritual woman indeed. We saw 2 weeks ago as well that it was her and not her husband who came up with the idea of building this little extension for Elisha and for Gehazi. So here is a woman, and she is a spiritual woman. We saw 2 weeks ago that she was the main instigator in instituting a godly home. But sadly, this woman, she had not a child, but the Lord miraculously gave her a child in old age. But she was to know the truth that Job also knew concerning the family. The Lord hath given, but also the Lord hath taken away. This child, it seems, it grew up in infancy. It had a happy childhood. And it would have enjoyed going out to visit his dad on the family farm. We have already intimated to you that Shunem, it was a village or a small farming town, and it was set on the valley of Jezreel. And of course, the land, it would have been lush. And here was probably a farming family. And the child, you imagine it, come harvest time, well, he would have loved to have gone out and to help his father. But sadly, this harvest was like no other. Verse 20, we read that he sat on her knees till noon and then died. This young child was out helping his dad one day, and it sadly took a pain in its head. And it was then brought into his mother. And just as every mother would, well, this mother, she took the child, she took him upon her knee, and she tried to nurse him better. But at noontime, this child, it sadly passed away on the lap of her mother. Realizing that her child was now dead and that she was helpless, you see, this godly woman, this Shunammite woman, going to someone whom she knows can solve this problem. She goes to one of the local servants on the farm and she asks him to bring a donkey. She is discouraged. She is told, well, it's not a special day. It's not a new moon. It's not a Sabbath. Why are you going on a journey? And she implores this man, I want a donkey. I'm going to see someone who can intervene in our situation. And this woman, this godly woman, this Shunammite woman, what does she do? Well, she goes to Elisha. As we have already seen, this man of many miracles. And she has already witnessed him perform the miracle of giving them life in the first place. He was the one who sovereignly, he was the one who supernaturally, through the power of God, had given them this child in the first place. And so now she goes to Elisha. And her thinking is this. If he has given the child, and the Lord has sadly taken away this child, well, Elisha is the only one who can raise this child back again to life. And rather than harboring anxiety over your children, what you need to do this morning is hand over your children. Like this godly woman, hand over your children to the one who is able to raise them from the dead. The Bible's very clear. We are all born in sin. We are all sinners. Whenever we enter this world as a child, we are born spiritually dead. And it is only the resurrecting power of a resurrected Jesus Christ that can raise anybody to newness of life. And parent and grandparent this morning, it's exactly the same with your children. Oh, your children, they need to be raised again. And the only person who can raise your children, your grandchild, again to life is Jesus Christ. And so what do you need to do? You need to follow in the footsteps of this lady and hand over that child to Jesus Christ. And say, look, Lord, I'm helpless. Yes, they might be alive physically, but spiritually, Lord, I'm helpless. And you're the one that can raise them. Christ alone is the one who can raise spiritual children from the dead. And oh, this morning, are you doing that? Father, are you doing that? Mother, are you doing that? Grandparents, great grandparents, are you doing that? Are you handing over your children to the Savior? Are you saying, look, there they are, they're dead, they need to be raised again, they need to be resurrected, and you alone are the only one who can do it? Oh, what an example. What an example of how to raise dead children. And so this morning we want to think of this theme. This theme of raising dead children. And thinking about raising dead children, I have four thoughts with you this morning. Think with me firstly about a comprehension that is necessary. A comprehension that is necessary. Verse 17, we read, the woman conceived and bare a son. At that season that Elisha had said unto her, according to the time of life. We saw 2 weeks ago that this was a godly home. Here was a home that wanted, that desired the power, the presence, and the purity of the prophet Elisha. It was the concern that Elisha be preeminent in this home. But whilst this home was godly, there was one thing that was missing in that home. And that was this. It was the smile and the joy of a little child. In Bible times, barrenness or sterility in terms of children was looked upon and indeed frowned upon as a great transgression. If you could not have children, well, you were considered to be a great sinner. It was wrongly considered that if you could not have children in your family, then you must have committed some great sin in the past, and so it was God's condemnation against you that you could not have children. And this home, we have seen that to be completely false, because here was a godly home. Here was a home that sought to honor the Lord, that invited Elisha into their home. So here was a godly home. So that puts that argument to bed. But nonetheless, this home, it did not have children. And Elisha, well, he said to Gehazi, his servant, well, the best way to bless this home is with a child. And so we saw a few weeks ago that miraculously he gave this barren mother a child. So this mother would have had a comprehension, an understanding, And that was this, that this child was sovereignly given to her by Almighty God. It was the Lord that had implanted the child in her womb. And day after day, they would have been confronted with this little walking miracle. As the child was born, and as the child walked amongst them, as this young lad jumped perhaps and went to see his dad on the farm, every day they would have been confronted. Here's a walking miracle. Here is something that God and God alone has given to us. Rendell said, she more than any mother in Israel, at that time had been taught the basic lesson that all life comes from God. And so this mother, she had this understanding day by day that this child was sovereignly, supernaturally given by God. You see, children are not merely a given in marriage. Rather, they are given as a gift to the home. They are something that are sovereignly given by God. And I say to you this morning, if there are children in your home, or if there are have ever been children in your home, you need to see them this way. You need to see them as a gift from God. You need to see them as sovereignly and supernaturally given by the Lord. Whether it be 4 months ago or 40 years ago or whatever time it might be, it was God that put that child in your home. They are not just an automatic in marriage. They are something that God and God alone blesses a family with as their stewardship. Psalm 127 verse 3. We read, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. How are children described in that wonderful psalm about the home? They're described as a reward. They're described as an inheritance, something that we inherit from the Lord. When Job lost his family and they were taken from him, what did he say? Job 1:21, the Lord gave and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Whenever there is life given and life then taken away, we need to remember that God is the giver of life. And that, of course, is applicable to life, but it's also applicable to death as well. Whenever the Lord grants a family and a home with life, it is the Lord. And he alone then has the power to remove life as well. Ecclesiastes 11 verse 5 tells us, thou knowest not what is the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child. Even so, thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. Remember the context of the book of Ecclesiastes. Here's Solomon, and he's looking back at all of his experiences in life, and inspired by God, what does he pen? He pens that even in the womb, we don't know how life grows. We don't know how the bones, how they come together. It is divinely a mystery. Even so, thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. You see, whilst children may be generated naturally, they are placed firstly there sovereignly. It is God that gives the child to the home. And all you need to see this morning, recognize this. They're a gift from God. They're a gift from God. Whether it be children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, whatever it might be, they're to be viewed as a gift solely from God. What does James 1 tell us? James 1:17, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above. It's from the Lord. It's from the Lord. And here's this mother, and she had that joy of seeing this little one run about day after day, and she would have been confronted with this comprehension, this understanding, that little one of mine has nothing to do with me. Oh, there was nothing to do with her. It was sovereignly placed there through the instrumentality of Elisha. And so here was a comprehension that is necessary when raising dead children. But I want you to see, secondly, here a condition that is hereditary. a condition that is hereditary. Verses 19 and 20 we read, he said unto his father, my head, my head. He said to your lad, carry him to his mother. When he had taken him, brought him to his mother, he sat on her knees till noon, and then died. This child was born. This child grew up. It continued to grow. It seems that his father, a farmer in Shunem, in the lush valley of Jezreel, it was harvest time. And so naturally the child, well, it goes out and it wants to help dad with the harvest. But harvest time in Israel, it's not like harvest time here. Harvest time in Israel was known for being extremely warm weather-wise. And this little lad, he was out in the farm and probably would have been out day after day helping his dad. And we read here that it takes a pain in its head. Now, Bible commentators are virtually agreed that this would have been a sun or a heat stroke due to the warm weather. And so here's this child that's going out to see its dad day after day. And sadly and tragically, it contracts a disease and it almost instantaneously dies from that disease. And now nursing her dead child, it was noontime. I want to take you to that home in Shunem. What heartbreak there must have been for a servant just to carry this child in and this mother to be sitting there trying to nurse her child round, trying to bring the child round, and yet at noon time, at noon, that time when all of the workers and her husband would have been coming in for tea, at noon time, she there is nursing her dead child. She was faced now with that stark reality and that stark tragedy that her child was dead, and more than that, she was absolutely powerless to help him, even though she would have done everything imaginable. And like this child was to her mother physically, so all children are before God spiritually. Rather than being full of spiritual life, they are lifeless before the Lord. We need to realize this morning. Yes, there's much to love about children. Much that can make us smile. But at the same time, we need to see them. Whilst physically they might be alive, that reality is that spiritually they are dead. Just as this mother nursed her dead child physically, so day after day, month after month, year after year, mother, you nurse a dead child. You nurse someone who has absolutely no spiritual life within them. Children, they are born, and when they are born spiritually dead. Ephesians 2 verse 1, Paul writes to believers in Ephesus, and he says, you hath he quickened who were dead in trespasses and sins. And the word quickened there, the verb quickened, it means to make alive. To make alive. And so here are individuals. And what does Paul write to them? He's speaking to them of their former condition before they were made alive. And we're speaking spiritually here. Before the Holy Spirit entered into their heart and entered into their lives, how does he describe them? Dead in trespasses and in sins. And the phrase to be dead there, it actually comes from the root noun in the Greek for a word, the word which is a corpse. What is he saying? He's saying, you're alive now, but you were a corpse before. You were a corpse. A walking corpse. Yes, they were alive and all was well physically, but spiritually, they were walking corpses. Again, David, after he had transgressed greatly, he says in Psalm 51, verse 5, I was shapen in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me. So he's taking us here even to before birth. In sin did my mother conceive me. He's speaking there about conception. How was that? That was David, King David, the man after God's own heart. How was he in the womb? He was conceived in sin. Conceived in sin. Shapen in iniquity. That means formed. Formed. Fashioned in sin. Even before he was born. And as well as being lovable, we need to realize that children are ultimately lifeless. They are literally dead in their sins. And oh, you need to realize this morning. That whenever we're born, we're not born with even so much as a flicker of light spiritually within us. There's nothing. What does Romans tell us? There is none that seeketh after God. There's none that doeth good. Nobody even seeks after God. Why? Because we have absolutely no desire of our own to seek after God. And yes, there's much that delights a home about a child. And there's much that to cherish about a child. But remember this, day after day when you nurse the child, they're dead in sins. And just like this child, they're in need again of being raised to newness of life. They're in need of being resurrected by none other than Jesus Christ. C.H. Spurgeon said, unless you have a very clear sense of the utter ruin and spiritual death of your children, you will be incapable of being a blessing to them. Go to them, not as sleepers, because you cannot awaken them from their slumber, but as spiritual corpses who can be quickened only by a power divine. Did you get that? Go to your children, not as sleepers. Don't even see them as spiritually sleeping, as slumbering. See them as spiritual corpses. And you're hopeless and powerless to raise them by yourself. Now I labour this point this morning, and there's a very good reason for it. Because there are some in Reformed churches today who believe in a very, very dangerous and dastardly doctrine called presumptive regeneration. What's that, you say? Well, whenever a child is born and that child goes through the waters of baptism, they merely presume that that child is regenerated, that that child spiritually is alive until that child shows otherwise. In other words, until it goes off into the world and gets into grievous sin. But that's not scriptural. That is not scriptural. And there are pulpits today who believe this, who teach this, that you just presume your child is saved until they show you otherwise. Child of God, that's dangerous. You need to get a proper understanding of what your child really is like before the Lord. Spiritually speaking, it's dead in sins and there is no life in it, and it needs to be given life by Jesus Christ. So there is a comprehension that is necessary and a condition that is hereditary. I want you to see thirdly here a compassion that is mandatory. A compassion that is mandatory. Verses 21 and 22. We read concerning the mother of this child that she went up, laid him on the bed of the man of God and shut the door upon him and went out. And she called her husband and said, send me, I pray thee, one of the young men, one of the asses, that I may run to the man of God and come again. I want again to take you back to this home. Here's this mother. She'd been nursing the child, trying to revive it, trying to bring it to life. But sadly, this child, it had passed away and she was powerless. After a little while, undoubtedly of mourning, weeping, of grieving, we're not told that, but undoubtedly it all happened. I want you to see the tender compassion of this mother. She takes her little dead child and she thinks to herself, what am I going to do in this situation? And she thinks to herself, well, there's one that can help, and that's Elisha. And so what does she do? Well, she goes to the extension that she has built for Elisha. Elisha's away at this time. And she just spreads her little child on the bed. She then goes to a servant. And she says to her servant, go and get me a donkey, an ass, that I might saddle it, that I might run and find Elisha who can help. I want you to see the wonderful compassion of this mother. She immediately, she has this set in her mind that I'm going to do everything imaginable and everything possible to see this child reached or raised again to life. I want you to see her now in the donkey. Donkey's not such a quick animal, an ass. And I want you to see her just riding this donkey with this servant, and she's probably beating the life out of it and trying to get it go as fast as she can. She says to her servant, don't you stop for anybody. If someone comes along, unless I tell you to stop, don't stop for anybody. You go to Elisha and you make sure that you find him. What a heart of compassion. She then comes to Elisha and she beseeches Elisha to come back to her home and to raise her child to life again. Just as he was the one who had given the child in the first place, so he was the one who had the power to raise this child again to life. And raising dead children, whilst it requires a comprehension of them, it also requires a compassion for them. A sacrificial love towards them. It's one thing to know in your head, children are dead in sins, and there's no spiritual life in them. It's another thing day by day to live in that experience in your heart. To see that child, yes, lovable, but to see them dead in their sins and to labor with a godly compassion to see that child raised to life. Because we all have compassion. Even you go to the far-flung corners of the earth, go to Africa, go to Asia, I've been there myself, and I have seen the natural compassion of mothers and fathers towards their children. But we're talking now about godly compassion, spiritual, genuine love, sacrificial love that wants to see your child raised to life through Jesus Christ. You need to see your children this morning as entrusted to you by God. They are a stewardship given to you, and they have been placed in your care, and we must have that love, that heart, that compassion to see them raised again. Sadly today, children, what are they viewed as? Or how are they viewed, rather? They're viewed as a liability, viewed as a setback, viewed as a hindrance to my career desires and my career goals and my career objectives, when they're to be viewed exactly the opposite, as gifts from God. Something given to you, something that you're to take care of, that you're to put them first in everything. That's what love is. That's what love means in the Greek. It means to love sacrificially, to put somebody else before you. And I wonder, can you say that spiritually? You say spiritually, I have this love, I have this all-consuming compassion to see the child, one for Jesus Christ. Wonder today, do we have that in our kids' club? Wonder, do we have that today in our Sunday school, in our youth fellowship? That heart of compassion, spiritual compassion, not natural compassion, but spiritual compassion to see children raised again and resurrected by Jesus Christ. Malachi 4 verse 6 we read, He shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse. Here is speaking about apostasy. That's what Malachi is ministering to people who are in apostasy. And what was one of the results of apostasy? Fathers not loving their children. Not having a genuine love and heart for their children. And he's looking forward and he says, when Jesus Christ comes to inaugurate his spiritual reign on the earth, what will happen? Well, spiritually, children will be given a heart for their fathers. And likewise, fathers will be given a heart for their children. They'll be given a genuine love for their children. Many years ago, a little boy, he walked several miles across the city of Chicago. It was cold, it was the winter, it was frosty. And he walked to the Sunday school of D.L. Moody. And one Sunday in the heart of winter, one of his assistants, Moody's assistants, said to the young boy, son, why is it that you walk miles to this Sunday school in the cold winter? You have a Sunday school really near you. Why do you come to our Sunday school? The little boy's response was this, because they love a fellow here. Because they love a fellow here. Oh, wonder today, could be said of you, could it be said of your home, that they love a fellow here? Could it be said of this congregation that we love individuals here, that we love the children that have been given to us by God, that we have that genuine heart of love for them, to see them all come in and swept into the kingdom of God and raised by Jesus Christ? One last and quick thought, and I want to lastly think about a continuance that is obligatory. A continuance that is obligatory. Verse 30, and the mother of the child said, as the Lord liveth and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. And he arose and followed her. This mother met many obstacles in trying to get Elisha to come back to her house to raise the child to life. When she firstly wanted the donkey, well, the servant came and said, it's not a special day. Well, what do you need the donkey for? So there was an obstacle there. Then whenever she came to Elisha and she saw Elisha, well, firstly she came to Gehazi. And there was the suggestion made to her, well, we'll not send Elisha, we'll just send Gehazi. We'll just send the servant of the prophet. We'll not send the prophet himself. But look at the determination in this mother. Verse 30, she says, I'm not settling for anything less than unless you're coming to my home and raising this child to life. Verse 30, as the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. And he arose and followed her. She's saying, Elisha, you can send whoever you want, but I'm not leaving. I'm not leaving your feet until you come, and until you come back to my house and raise my child to life. Oh, there was a continuance. A refusal to give up on the part of this mother until her child was brought back to life. And raising children, while it requires compassion, it also requires consistency and continuance. And continuing on, in spite of the difficulties. If you've ever had children in your home, you'll know that there are difficulties, that there are obstacles, that there are trials. You want to see that child raised to life. You want to see them raised in the fear and admonition of God. Well, there's going to be difficulties, going to be hardships, going to be obstacles. Wonder, is there that consistency in your home? That desire like this mother, I'm going to stop at nothing until Elisha comes, Jesus Christ, the greater than Elisha comes, and raises my child to life. Whenever Elisha came into the home, he went into that room that he would have been so accustomed to going to. And he did something very interesting. He spread himself directly over the child. Directly over the child, so he was covering the child. And he breathed life into that child. The child sneezed, then he breathed again, and this child was raised to life. And what is that a picture of? It is a picture of Jesus Christ spreading himself over your child, breathing spiritual life into your child, your grandchild, whatever it might be, and seeing them raised and resurrected by his omnipotent power. Oh, wonder will we see dead children raised to life. John and Charles Wesley, and with this I close, they had a mother who prayed individually for each of her children. Now bear in mind, Charles Wesley's mother had 17 children. She gathered them round every day before they went to bed, gathered them around her knee, and she named them one by one and prayed for them individually. And this is what John Wesley said of his mother. I learned more of Christianity from my mother than all the theologians of England. And that is the type of home that the Lord wants. That is the type of godly home and godly parents that the Lord wants. Parents and mothers, fathers that will gather around their little ones, around their knee, and teach them, and pray for them, see them raised to life, raising dead children. May the Lord bless his word to your lives this morning.